Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar Free. First round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's time for the Front Office Report with the Red Sox Chief Baseball Officer Craig Breslow. And the Front Office Report is brought to you by Shaw's and Star Market, perfecting the art of fresh, and by findmassmoney.gov. Good morning, Craig. How are you?
I am good. Good morning. Quick turnaround from last night to today. So.
Yeah, well, I'm sure it's a much easier turnaround given the win in 10 innings. Magic number down to 8. What are you looking for down the stretch right in here as you're preparing, I'm sure, scouting for the playoffs, but wanting to make sure you get in before that happens?
Yeah, I think the most important thing that we can do is keep the focus on the day-to-day. You talk in the offseason about building a roster that's capable of making the postseason and a deep postseason run, and we talk about playing meaningful games in September, and now that we're in the midst of it, there's a ton of energy and enthusiasm around the park. It's a fun place to show up at every day. But I think from my perspective, the coaching staff, the players, it's the focus on what we have to do and how we can execute today to win the game.
And, you know, we do a lot of this, you know, what's a successful season? Is just making the playoffs enough? Where do you stand on, how do you gauge the season when it comes to your role as the baseball czar for the organization? Is it just making the playoffs? Is it, you know, advancing a series? How do you gauge what would be a successful season for the Red Sox?
Yeah, I think you have to go back to our stated goals. And, you know, we tried to build a roster that we felt could compete for the division, could make the postseason, and was capable of a deep postseason run. And you know, we can look at our record today and say our record in 2025 is going to be an improvement relative to 2024, but that's not what our goals were. So, you know, I think we need to finish strong here. We need to make the postseason, and you know, we should prime ourselves for a deep postseason run.
Craig, when you look at finishing strong, you guys ultimately have kind of backed yourself into a corner a little bit because of some of, you know, earlier series that I think, you know, a lot of us expected you to win. I think Arizona was one of them. I forget the other one that we had talked about. Obviously, the Yankees series and that. How what's the message been to that team as far as, you know, like being backed in a corner right now?
Yeah, well, we can't go back and win the games that, you know, that we lost. But in the moment, you always think about, man, this one hurts, or this was a very winnable game, you know, and you hope that you're not looking back at the end of the season and thinking that you're a game away or two games away from being where you want to be. But in terms of backing ourselves into a corner, I'm not sure that that's the way the players or the staff see it. For two reasons. One is because this is a group that has overcome a ton of adversity and challenges and has shown a ton of resilience, you know, whether that's injuries, you know, guys, important pieces being out for lengthy periods of time. And then the other is, you know, because I think that could force you to lose sight of the small things that you need to do to execute, you know, in order to win. And we've had chances to win a lot of the games that you just brought up. We've had traffic on the bases. We've had some good at bats to put ourselves in position to score runs. And what we haven't done is, you know, gotten the big hit or put the ball in play to get a run across the board. Fortunately, we were able to do that last night, but I think that focus on execution is where we should be spending our time.
Craig, the return of Willy Abreu seems to keep getting pushed. Is this just a precaution to make sure he's fully ready to come back? Is it the timing of where you're at in the season, or is he facing setbacks?
He's not facing setbacks. You know, I think we're trying to exercise the right amount of caution, but also recognize where we are in the season and the importance of getting him back and what he means in our lineup. You know, the second that we can write his name into the middle of our lineup, we give ourselves a guy that can hit the ball out of the park, you know, is capable of 25 to 30 home run potential. But Cavs are, they're fickle, you know, and it seems like, we've been in this kind of day to day period for a few weeks now. But he's making pretty steady progress. He's had some aggressive base running and swings earlier in the week. And, you know, we want to make sure that when he comes back, he's capable of helping us and contributing.
Craig, just, I know we spoke with you, or I asked you a couple weeks ago about the rotation, balancing, getting guys ready for the wild card round or the first round of the playoffs, as opposed to pursuing the division championship and getting seeding. Has your mindset shifted at all? Is it all about getting, you know, Crochet the ample amount of rest ready for that first playoff game? And, or is it, you know, still trying to win every game you can right now?
Yeah, I think right now, as kind of dictated by the way that we've mapped out the rotation, we've got to win these games. We've got to get ourselves in before we worry about how we're set up once we're there. You know, and getting guys on regular rest, and you know, making sure that the top of our rotation is touching the ball as many times as possible, you know, in this last week and a half is really important. And then we'll figure out how we can buy ourselves some rest. We've got some off days coming up that we'll be able to take advantage of. If we need to keep somebody short, we can always do that. But the way that Connolly has stepped into the rotation also gives us quite a bit of optimism and confidence for how we're going to stack up no matter how the rotation falls.
And you brought up Connolly early, got taken out early, no pun intended, with 80 pitches. Is that another case where you're telling Cora that you need to take him out here? We're at this pitch limit, how did that work that night?
Yeah, so Alex, Andrew, and I, alongside medical staff, we're always talking about you know, workloads and what we think guys are capable of, and you know, and then Alex, Andrew, and I will talk through some different scenarios and strategies before the game happens. But I think we all have been doing this long enough to recognize that a game is fluid, and once the game starts, like, the manager has the ability to make in-game decisions. And you know, Alex felt like there was an opportunity to create a good matchup with Weiss. It didn't work out, but if it had, then we would have all been, you know, applauding that. And so, you know, I think we saw last night Alex handle the bullpen management deftly and put ourselves in a really good position to win.
Just quickly on that, though. So in the playoffs, if you are to get there, you know, does the analytics play a bigger role, or do you give it more to the field given the short sample size of each of these series and the must-win nature of those games?
I think the way that I see this is, you know, the job of the front office, the analysts, is to try to provide our staff with as much information as we can, recognizing that, you know, once the first pitch is thrown, it's on the field staff to make decisions. And, you know, Alex has done a really good job with that, marrying the information that we're able to work through and provide together with recognizing that there are things that come up in games that force you to make real-time adjustments. And, you know, sometimes we talk through those once the game is over, and we have really productive conversations just about, you know, some of the things that came up and how we react to them. But ultimately, I've got a ton of confidence in Alex's game in-game decision making.
Craig, when you look at your team, where is Roman Anthony as far as maybe somebody that you could see playing in the postseason, obviously, if you guys get there? What's his status looking like?
Yeah, so he's making progress, albeit slow but steady progress, just in terms of the symptoms subsiding, feeling a lot more comfortable, activity ramping up. I know a lot has been made of his walks over the last few days. But I think there's also been a noticeable shift just in the way that Roman is thinking about the injury and thinking about his timeline, and he is committed doing everything he possibly can to getting back on the field. And obviously that's only going to be a boom to what we're trying to do here.
Craig, Curtis brought up Connolly early and then Kyle Harrison, Peyton Tolley being put into the bullpen. What do you see as the future for him? Because his first outing was so great and then things kind of fell off. What's the future look like for Peyton Tolley?
Yes, we still have a ton of confidence in his ability to be an impact major league starting pitcher. You know, this is a situation where we're trying to give ourselves the best chance of winning every game possible. And Connolly, you know, kind of has the true starter mix right now. I think we've seen that manifest over his two starts. And Kyle Harrison is, you know, he's pitched as a starter in the big leagues. You know, and some of the additions to his repertoire, we feel like will give him the ability to navigate a lineup a few times. And Peyton's just got, you know, this big fastball that we think can play really well out of the pen and not just cover innings, but actually, you know, be a weapon and provide real impact out of the pen. So that's what went into those decisions.
What did you take from Cora's comments recently saying he wants to stop all the talk about October?
Yeah, I mean, the way that I took that was as the manager, he needs to be consumed with the day-to-day and the focus on preparing for tonight's game to give ourselves the best chance possible to win it. You know, so I think that a lot was made out of that. And, you know, was this questioning kind of the confidence in the team or any of that? And I just look at that as, you know, what is the role of the manager? And it's prepare our players to play as well as they can every single day. And if you're thinking about a week from now or 2 weeks from now, it's going to be really hard to focus on the present.
Craig, that's very interesting because I would agree that the moment you're in is for the managers and the players to focus on that. But for somebody in the front office like yourself, you have to not only think about the present, but you also have to think about the future. When you look at this team, and whether it's you or Cora talking about the young talent that you have, can we expect as fans for you guys to be super aggressive in the offseason, knowing that you have this young talent and you want to bolster this, you know, bolster this team with adding some pieces and being very aggressive?
Yes, so I think going back to that first comment that the manager is thinking about the present and the day-to-day, and my job is to try to balance the short-term with the long-term. Like, I think that's exactly right, and I've talked a lot about how you know, Alex and I have different jobs and we need to complement each other. But now in terms of what, you know, the off season, what the future holds, I do think that the outlook for this organization is incredibly positive. We can see kind of the brand of baseball that we're looking to play, this exciting, young, athletic, dynamic group that should be cornerstones for a really long time. And our job in the front office is to supplement that group with talent that can help us, that can help put us over the edge. So we're going to explore every opportunity to bolster the roster, to improve, because we believe like our window of contention is upon us right now.
All right, Craig. Well, Greg will be back next week, and he just wants to know when you guys clinch, which bar to go to. So you can just pass that along to Ken or someone. We'll figure that out. But good luck today, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Sounds great. Thank you.
Thank you. There's Craig Breslow. He's going to party like a rock star when they clinch. He's going to have three Zimas.
Mm-hmm. I can't wait to see those photos.
WEEI Afternoons at Fenway Park, going to the guest line now, where we do each and every week at this time to talk to Adam Schefter. ESPN's Adam Schefter is brought to you by your New England Chevy dealers. Together, let's drive, and by Jeanne d'Arc Credit Union, tackling financial wellness since 1912. Stronger members, stronger communities. Learn more at jdcu.org. Adam Schefter, how are we doing this week?
Gentlemen, what's going on?
So a lot of Tom Brady in the NFL news this week. Seems like always. But let's start. Yeah, let's start with the coaches' booth. He was in the Raiders coaches' booth the other night, and that drew a lot of attention on social media. A lot of fans, a lot of ex-players, and people reacting to that. How did that really resonate across the league within the NFL?
You know, I think there are people, there are coaches who are leery of it. I think that that is true. Like, I heard from a couple of people. I'm like, why are you concerned? They're like, well, he was a part of Spygate and Deflategate. I'm like, okay. I mean, to me, again, I'm just thinking of my experience in the media. When I speak to people on the phone, there are times they don't want to share certain things with me. Just like when Tom's in another team's building for a practice or a production meeting or whatever it is that they allow him into. They don't have to bring him into the war room and show him the depth chart and the notes or the how they have the college prospects ranked. They're not doing that. They don't have to say, like, this guy that's our backup linebacker is going to be a future star, you know, when he's on an expiring contract so that Tom knows to go tell her we need to go sign this linebacker. Like, you share what you want to share. That's on the teams. And so if you have somebody that is giving you concerns, well, then you can obviously decide to be more, selective with what you share with him. That's on you, okay? But I don't have any issues with him going to production meetings or if they want to run fewer plays at practice or not show him certain things or not tell him certain things at production meetings or share less information. That's up to them. That's fine. I don't have an issue with that. But Tom has a job to do, and I'd like to think that he's professional enough that it's not going to be an issue. That's my stance.
So how about that performance from Drake May Sunday down in Miami, Adam? I know you were a proponent of his last week. You said he had it, and you were looking forward to seeing him. You think he took the step forward in the right direction you were looking for?
Well, in that game he did. I mean, I got him on. He's my quarterback on both my fantasy teams. So, you know, we'd like to see Drake May throw a touchdown. That's, you know, no problem there. That was the kind of game that you expect him to play. Those are the kinds of numbers that you think he'll put up. I think that was what you think you'll see this season. And hopefully for the Patriots' sake, there's more of that.
That was this week's Drake Take from Adam Schefter, presented by your New England Chevy dealers. Together, let's drive.
Hey, Adam, the Steelers, the next opponent for the Patriots, started out hot in week one and then cooled off last week, so they're 1-1 like the Patriots. I'm just curious to get your overall thoughts on how the Aaron Rodgers experience is going for Pittsburgh. I just read this the other day that I guess he's not doing the Pat McAfee show interviews anymore. So that must have been, something that came down from the head coach. But just your overall thoughts on how it's going so far for Aaron Rodgers.
Well, I don't know that it did or it didn't come down from the head coach. Obviously, he's got a relationship with Pat, and whether he wants to continue to pursue that, I'm sure, you know, Pat would have been happy to have him back, and for whatever reason, Aaron isn't back. I don't know whether that's requested from the team or decided himself. There's always a lot of things that could go into that. But, you know, he's played well. The Steelers had a very unconventional offseason, a very un-Pittsburgh-like offseason. Trades, big money, acquisitions, paying players from other teams. Like, you don't normally see that from the Pittsburgh Steelers. They're more reward their own players, draft their players, develop their own players, all those things. And it was a very un-Pittsburgh-like offseason, and it's continued to be a very un-Pittsburgh-like regular season in the sense that, you know, usually this team runs the ball, plays great defense, and wins 17-14, 20-17, whatever it may be. Now they're in shootouts, and now they're making mistakes, like special teams mistakes, and now they're not running the ball as well, and the defense has come under fire. So, again, the areas where they've been really stout in other years, they have not been this year. And the areas where they've not been as explosive in other years, they have been this year. And it just seems like everything is opposite with the Pittsburgh Steelers this year.
Adam Schefter with us here on WEEI Afternoons. And Adam, I can't believe my buddy here, Ted Johnson, didn't ask this question. He hates the play. The tush push seems like it's in the spotlight, getting a lot of criticism this week. Is the tush push on officially life support?
Well, I think it was on life support anyway. You know, frankly, I was surprised it wasn't tossed last year. I think it had something to do with the fact that the Eagles made a compelling case to keep it. They brought in Jason Kelce. They presented evidence that they didn't believe that it posed any additional player safety health risks. And so, you know, I was surprised it was kept last year. And now there's been, again, a lot of negative conversation about it this year. We're two games in. Obviously, there'll be a lengthy season to still play out. Yeah, I thought it was on life support last year. It survived. I think it'll be on life support. Maybe it will survive. Maybe it won't. But clearly, it's a play that really – it doesn't bother me. Like, I have no issues with the play like other people, but there are some people that really hate that play.
I would be one of them, but that's okay. I don't have a vote.
Another one.
Yep, and Ted played in the NFL.
Get rid of it.
He hates it too.
Why do you hate it so much?
It's very simple. It's very, very simple. It comes down to the fact that the defense is not allowed to push the defensive lineman into the offensive lineman like they are on their side of the ball. It's not a fair play for the defense if they can't do the pushing as well as the offense. So I see it as a fair thing. Aesthetically, I think it's an ugly play aesthetically, but I also, more importantly, think the play is inherently unfair to the defense.
I hadn't thought of it like that before. That's interesting. I like that take.
Yeah, what Ted said, exactly. So, Adam, real quick, obviously winning cures a lot that ails you, and Mike Vrabel now suddenly feels a lot better in New England. What is going on in Chicago? And Ben Johnson, they roll up the score on him, it seems, in Detroit. Now there's infighting. Is this situation getting out of hand quickly, or what?
I'm unaware of infighting. What's that about?
Well, I mean, he's yelling at the media today about bad, like he says they're guilty of bad practice habits and is very unhappy with the team. It just seems like it's an unpleasant start to the Ben Johnson era.
I think anywhere where they're 0-2, it's going to be unpleasant. I mean, you could go to the city and it's going to be unpleasant. And I think in Chicago, there were a lot of expectations and it's been a slow start. I think people knew it was going to take some time for Ben Johnson and Caleb Williams to connect and be productive at the highest levels. It wasn't going to happen right away. But they've got some issues to overcome right here. And, you know, it looks like it may not be the kind of season that everybody expected, at least so far. We'll see if they can turn it around. Got some pressure on them right now. Dallas Cowboys on Sunday. Their former head coach, Matt Eberflus, is the defensive coordinator. I'm sure he's got something on his mind for the upcoming game. So, yeah, it's not a great start. But, again, we all knew, at least many people thought it was going to take some time. So let's see how it plays out.
You know what, Adam, if I could follow up on that. I'm curious just your opinion on – I thought it was odd just kind of how the Lions approached that game. You know, it looked like Dan Campbell was running up the score. You had guys kind of, upset that Ben Johnson would leave from a coordinator position to a head coaching job to a team that's in their division. It just seemed like the Lions players were not happy with Ben Johnson for taking that job. I mean, is there anything you can speak to that? Is that overblown? But I just never seen that dynamic before.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think Ben Johnson did exactly what he should have done. The money was so great at that point in time that the Bears are offering enough. I don't know. I forget where the number came in, $12 million a year. You have to, when the money gets that high, you have to do it. So I don't know what problem they have. Like, that's the way it goes.
Yeah. It surprised me.
Right?
It surprised me.
Adam, real quick before we let you go, we started with Tom Brady. Let's end with Tom Brady. You had the announcement on social media. He's going to be playing flag football in Saudi Arabia. What's your reaction to that? And do you think that falls in line with the NFL's sort of global expansion flag football plan that they've kind of been using business-wise?
You know, I think there's quite a partnership going between Fanatics and the NFL, and it's hard for me to imagine that the NFL is just blindsided by this, right? Like, that they didn't know about it. I'm sure the NFL signed off on it. I'm sure the NFL was good with it. It's got some marquee players, current, former, head coaches involved. Like, there's no way the league doesn't sign off on that. I'd be shocked if it didn't know.
All right, Adam. Appreciate you joining us, and we'll catch up again next week.
Thanks, Adam.
Guys, have a great week. Thank you.
You too.
Thanks.
See you, Adam. Adam Schefter, ESPN, here on Fenway at Fenway Park, WEEI Afternoons in the Ford Clubhouse Fenway Studio, brought to you by your New England Ford dealers and the Ford Summer Sales Event. Hurry in to get great deals now, including on F-Series, official truck of the Red Sox.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar Free. First round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly you know what why people it's not, outside of Cleveland you know, think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Jones and Keefe leading you up to day baseball on WEEI. Red Sox and A's today, 1:35. Pregame at 12:35. We're sticking around with Joe Weil, hanging out in the Ford Clubhouse Fenway studio for a couple of segments today. You can dial us up, 617-779-7937. But we're pleased to be joined by Rob Bradford.
McFarland.
McFarland, yes. To you, Rob, as well. Baseball isn't boring. And WEEI joining us here at Fenway Park. What's going on, Rob?
We talked about a lot of things in the break, right? Mm-hmm. Which I could just keep talking to you guys all the live long day, especially after that awesome Lucas Giolito podcast.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, excellent.
It helped Giolito quite a bit last
week. All right, Jones. The curse.
Lay off him, would you?
Usually, see, you do a baseball is a boring podcast, you get the bump. Yeah. I don't know what happens when you do the dork podcast.
I don't know.
We're going to have to track that, monitor it. But I was doing everything in my power not to say what I wanted to say right now, which is I heard you talk about Spinal Tap 2.
Yeah.
And it makes me so sad it's not doing well.
Yeah, it's not doing well at all.
But it makes me happy you said it was good.
It was good, yeah.
But you were reading the lineup. And what do you say? It's like, it should be Eaton Wong, you know?
Yeah.
Which
well,
immediately,
I was a wise man.
Yeah. It immediately made me think of Spinal Tap. And why?
Of course.
Sir Dennis Eaton Hogg.
Yeah. Yep, no doubt. Amazing.
I look driving. I'm like, why does it sound familiar? Oh, yeah. Sir Dennis Eaton Hogg from Spinal Tap.
Yeah, they went away from it today in the lineup. They did not. They broke those guys up a little bit.
Wow.
But Nate Eaton, one of the heroes from last night.
Yeah.
Rob, a game that they had to have. And you feel a little bit better about it. But how do you feel about these final 10 games and where they're at, 2.5 up on the Guardians?
I feel somewhere in between. I think it's like, okay, maybe. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 2025 Red Sox, colon, maybe. I think that what still concerns me is your inability to hit the ball out of the ballpark. And I know that they did last night.
You got Yoshida hitting cleanup today. What are you talking about?
Yeah, I know. Excellent job by Nick by going the exhaustive research in the home run log. I will say this, is that one of the good signs for me was Cora. And I know you talked a lot about Cora today. And I'm not too much like, oh my goodness, Cora had an unbelievable game. And just like I'm not too much the day before, oh my goodness, Cora blew it. But the Cora like suggesting or accepting that you have to pinch it for Rafaela, what you have to understand is that in the playoffs in key games, you have to make contact. And that was the perfect example. If you go early in the year, they were losing these one-run games. I still say a big reason why they did that was because they struck out more than everybody. They swung and missed more than everybody. When the rubber meets the road in late September and October, you have to put the ball in play. And I think that's a good example of it. So that's what you have to do. It kind of sucks that you have to grind it out as much as you have to grind it out. But it comes back to the same thing, guys. All these teams are flawed. And every time I've gone on our show on Saturdays many times and said, how are they ever going to score more than one run? And then they score like 15. So it's a bizarre team in a bizarre season. But at this point, science would suggest they are in the playoffs right now.
Okay. You're not as optimistic on that as I was thinking.
They really should be.
Well, I mean, I don't.
They should be. But let's say your hunch, your suspicion is right. They maybe don't get in. They collapse.
No. I think they're going to get in.
Let's say they don't.
Okay.
Who gets the most blame?
I think Breslow.
Interesting.
Yeah, I heard you say
Jones doesn't want to hear that.
I think that Cora, I hear what you're saying with Cora. I like you personally. Your prerogative to be wrong. TM. Let me tell you why. Because I think that ultimately what you've dealt with, what you've had to deal with in terms of talent, and you make a good point about you have Crochet, you have these relievers, you have pieces, but it's not like if you stack up this Red Sox roster against the Yankees, the Yankees are better. And I think that basically what had happened was that if they don't make it, then you didn't find a legitimate bat. You didn't find the Kyle Schwarber of the world. You didn't do enough at the trade deadline. I just think that that's the way to go, because I think that with Cora, I think he had a very, very uneven, less than great beginning of the year. But I think with the managers, when this happens to me, it's when you don't have a good handle on what you have. And this is what concerns me about this team right now. If we want to talk about Cora, because maybe ultimately Cora gets the blame. But at the beginning of the year, I don't think he had a great handle on what he had. They were all over the place, the bullpen, the lineup, everything else. And now his challenge, guys, is to find exactly who is going to do what. And I'll give you an example. He brings in Weiser. I agree, not a great move. I mean, since August 1st, 5 inherited runs, runners, 4 scored. So not a great move. But 2 days later, would he have done Zach Kelly, because all of a sudden Zach Kelly's pitching better? That's the point. And what do you have in Peyton Tolley? Is he a rookie? Do you have the potential? Do you have the production? You don't know what you have, and you have to figure that out in the next week and a half. And then in October, because when Cora was at his best, it was, I know where all these pieces fit. And it's a very convoluted answer to your question, so I apologize.
Does Cora have added value because they probably have a better chance of retaining Bregman if he's still here?
No.
It doesn't factor in?
No. I mean, you guys think Bregman's going to opt out?
No, I don't.
I don't think it's a slam dunk. Yeah, I don't think it's
There's no talk about it. Jones and I actually agree on that. We don't think he hasn't
hit for 2 months, and he missed 2 months.
And he got hurt and all that other stuff. But I just wonder, like, you also do need to bring him back. Like,
I've said this. I think Bregman is worth more to the Red Sox than maybe a lot of other teams perceive worth. And, you know, as I said, when I talked to Boris and he was pounding, well, he's not going to have the qualifying offer. And look, the Red Sox have all this money to spend because all these guys took bad deal, team-friendly deals and so forth. All true. That's fine. But the ultimately, with this production with Bregman has in the second half, to go into a free agent market, is he's got another opportunity to this. I mean, he has another year of $40 million and then another opt-out.
Right.
So he can do it all again. So I don't think Cora – I mean, Cora doesn't hurt, but I don't think that's the be-all, end-all.
So Bregman could opt out, as could Giolito and Story. Do you think either of them opt out?
I think Giolito is – he will probably opt out, take free agency. They could offer him the qualifying offer, which I think would kind of mess him up. Much like it kind of did. Pivetta got a deal with San Diego, but he would have got a better deal if there wasn't a qualifying offer. And if he takes a qualifying offer, instead of the $19 million he would pick up on his option, you get probably around 21, so okay. But I could see the Red Sox saying, all right, you know what, 2-3 year deal. But in terms of this boon that Giolito's going to get by becoming a free agent like he did last night, I don't know if that's going to be there. So I think that to answer your question about Giolito, I think that they'll show interest in him because what he represents and how good he's been. And then Story was the other one. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's going to opt out. I just don't.
Had a really good year.
He's had a really good year.
What is his situation? It's like if he opts out now, he would be leaving like 2 or 3 years on the table. Like there's a weird like opt out. It's not like year by year like Bregman would be.
No. He would basically be going to free agency and bypassing the last couple of years of a pretty good deal. Now, what is he, like $25 million, I think, a year? But which is good. Is he playing above $25 million this year? Probably. Yeah, probably. Although you look at this isn't fair to him because we know how good he's been other than May, but you look at his overall numbers, you know, OPS. What's his OPS? Is it over? It's not over 800 yet, is it?
Oh, is it that? Is it not?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of insane to think about. I mean, that's how bad he was.
Story's OPS is 752.
Yeah, so exactly.
Wow, that's a lot lower than I would have guessed.
Yeah, I mean, and but again.
A lot of steals, though.
A lot of steals.
Listen.
Guys got a lot of bags.
31 for 31. Biggest lead in the game. Biggest lead in the game.
That's true.
Everyone loves a good lead.
He really goes. Are they going to get Willie or Abreu back at any point?
Yes, I believe at some point.
Do you?
In 2025?
Yeah, I don't know.
Am I mistaken? Did you say you don't think we see him even this weekend? Did I see that from you?
I would not be surprised if you don't see him this weekend. I do not.
This weekend?
I do not believe any injury updates ever.
Yeah.
And I just know this, is that, you know, you're still having some discomfort, and I know he classified it well. What did he say? It's not like pain. It's just soreness.
This is Abreu. We played a clip from, or maybe I heard Cora talking about it, where he said, yeah, it was soreness, not pain.
Yeah. I think they also know that if you bring him back earlier than you have to, then you're going to, this is the calf thing. And as we've documented, we all have elite calves.
Yeah.
So if calf strength.
Little calf raises, don't
Mike, remember
do that.
Remember Mike Avilas? Remember Mike Avilas?
Yeah, I remember Mike Avilas. Bobby Valentine taught him how to catch a fly ball.
Yeah. Well, Google Mike Avilas calves.
Oh, yeah?
Can I do that on a work computer?
This is pieces
of meat.
This is maybe my, of all the things I've done professionally, taking a picture of Mike Avilas' calf. You, might be the most impactful thing I've ever done.
Wow, that is
sick. Right?
Defined.
Like Tyler O'Neill's arm.
No.
Tyler O'Neill's arms on a calf. That is exactly on a lower leg.
There you go. Okay.
Exciting.
So I think that my guess is that next week. If you have no significant setbacks, but yeah, next week.
How about Roman Anthony?
No.
Well, he's marching around on a treadmill.
Sneaky great line by Fitzy, the Natick Mall line.
walking
the Natick Mall.
Good spot.
Oh, yeah. I know that Kerstin Ken Laird back there was very excited about Roman Anthony, about him going into Cora and saying, hey, I feel good. But you're still walking on a treadmill for 20. I think nothing has changed in terms of.
No, we're not going to see him. We're not going to see him.
I mean, you'll see him when the place is full in the ALCS. Let's go. By the way, it's like, it's just so depressing that potentially that everyone has to go to Houston or Seattle.
Well, what's your prediction on that? So right now the Yankees are the top wild
card
team.
I think you go to Seattle.
You think it's at Seattle?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And which makes me sad because
it's a long flight for you.
It's a long, I know the Chilean miners had the same problem. I'm kind of dating myself now. I'm sticking the straw up through the ground. No, nobody got that.
Mike Avilas' calves right into the Chilean miners. Nobody else can do it.
I bring it all.
Yeah.
And I'll give you a third one where I was the sole reason I want the Red Sox to do well and get a home game for the Yankees.
Yeah.
Is because I don't know if I broached this with you. There's only one person to throw out the first pitch of that game. One person. And by the way, that person.
In a Sox-Yankees game?
Yeah, that person was on.
George W. Bush?
That person I was on the phone with last night and confirmed they will agree to throw out the first pitch.
Oh.
Yeah. My co-author.
Wade
Joe,
Boggs.
Joe Kelly.
Joe Kelly.
Joe Kelly, of course.
I mean,
I was about to
between Tyler Austin and talking a boatload of crap to the Yankees after the World Series.
Yeah, yeah.
This would rival the Danielle Peck, Josh Beckett ex-girlfriend in Cleveland in 2007.
What if you got Jacoby Ellsbury, Johnny Damon, Roger Clemens, Wade Boggs,
no.
Ramiro Mendoza?
No. This... Come on.
Don Zimmer from the sky.
No. Do, all wearing half jerseys, half Yankee, half Red Sox jerseys. They all come out.
All right. Well, Brad Fulbright gets some.
Very good.
Joe Kelly would agree to throw out the first
pitch.
He
would agree.
Should it get there. He would agree to do
it.
That's good news.
He has agreed. We're halfway there.
Okay, good. Well, we gotta get the rest of the
all
way.
All you need is an invite.
All right, Hogdale. Let's go.
Hog's coming in. Hog's on deck.
I saw him walking, right? He was just walking around. He's trying to find a way to get in.
He's behind you.
Oh, there he is.
Behind you.
The Hogman's here. All right, I love it.
He's everywhere.
All right, well, Brad Fo is brought to you by McFarland Energy, the heating, cooling, and bioheat delivery pros that Eastern Mass and all of Cape Cod depend on. At McFarlandEnergy.com. Brad Foe, as always, we appreciate it. Thanks so much.
All right, guys. I'll see you.
Thank you.
We got Hogdale here. We'll check in next.
Speaking of the manager of the Boston Red Sox, Alex Cora joining us in studio here. He is brought to you by Shaw's and Star Market, the official supermarket of the Red Sox Radio Network, by Arbella, here for baseball fans, here for good, and by John Sewer and Drain Cleaning, the name to know when your drains don't flow. Mr. Cora, how are we doing?
Doing good, doing good. How are you guys doing?
We're good. I mean, you know, there's some angst in the air, I don't know if you've noticed, in Red Sox Nation. But let's start with the good. Before we get into some of those questions and angst, back-to-back starts from Connelly Early, where he was unbelievably good. Whatever else happens around him, you have to like what you saw from the young pitcher.
Yeah, and that's something we've been talking about the whole season, right? Like, if we pitch, we're going to be okay, and he's part of the equation now. That's a really good lineup. They do damage against left-handed pitching, and to pitch in Sacramento where the ball flies and strike out 11 and be under control, that was one thing. And then yesterday, his first outing at Fenway, and you see him in the clubhouse, you see him in the pregame meeting, and the way he behaved on the mound, that was eye-opening. You know, very calm, uses all his pitches, understands when to expand, controlled the running game yesterday. So that was great to see.
Well, Alex, love you, mean it, but now I'm going to have to be the bad guy and ask a tough question or two. So, one, whose decision was it to pull Early at 80? Was that something that was preordained to start the game off?
I made the decision.
You did? That was your call to pull him at 5 1/3. It was looking good.
Yep.
I know he has one guy on. And then subsequently, why Weissert in that spot? Only because I know, I've been at some of these games as well. I've seen him, the Tolley outing as well, runners inherited score, position score. Back in July, I believe it was July 2nd, came into a game, had a tough spot. I feel like clean innings benefit him well, but I wasn't sure if that was gut, numbers, or both.
No. I think right now where we at with Slayton, we prefer him in clean innings. Obviously, he's building up. So the other righty that we have is Zach Kelly, who can go multiple innings. So you keep him in the bullpen as long as possible. And if something happens, then you bring him later in the game. But with Wise, he's throwing the ball well, you know, and he got the big out. He got the righty out.
Yeah.
And, you know, he made a mistake on the fastball right down the middle. And we talk about that situation. And for me, you know, Meta first, 3-2 count, and we wanted him to chase up.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mind the walk there. You know, you go up, he swings at it. It's a strikeout. He doesn't swing at it. It's a walk, and you move on to the next guy. So, I mean, he's been good for us the whole season, and he's one of the righties that we trust.
While you clearly have reasoning behind every decision you make, when it goes sideways, when it doesn't work out the way you want, do you second guess? Do you agonize? Because everybody else does, right? Everybody on the outside.
I don't second guess, but I go home and you think about it, right? And it's one of those that for a while there, whenever we made a move, it worked out, right? And, you know, it didn't work out yesterday. It didn't work out. I was just looking at some of them, you know, and the Tolley one, we talk about it. And that's the reason we brought him in, too, with men at first. I think, you know, everybody gets caught up. Oh, he's 5 1/3, but that guy gets on, he's 2nd and 3rd, and we're going to have to make a move there. And you're going to put him in a tougher spot as a reliever, 2nd and 3rd, one out, 1st and 2nd, one out, and then you really have to make pitches.
Okay, we'll talk about no politics at the dinner table. We will not talk about October right now. That has been banned from the program. Right?
It's not banned. I mean, the question was about the third catcher in October. So, like,
because like, there's so many different things we'd love to. I know you're not there yet, and I'm not sure if you're a superstitious man or not. I know you want to focus one game at a time. You got 11 left, and last night was a tough one, and you'd love to pick up a few more that could give you distance between the Guardians and really secure this wild card spot. But has Connolly early pitched well enough, even though it's only in two starts, to secure that fourth spot either the remainder of the way or should you need a fourth starter in the postseason?
He's pitching on Sunday, so I think that tells you the whole story, right? And it's not that, you know, we can talk about how young he is and all that, but pitchability comes into play, and he has a lot of weapons. And, the fastball plays, but the off-speed pitches, they're really good. And there's something about being under control in the mound that really gets my attention. And, you know, he's been with us, 10 days? And it feels like he's been with us for, 3 months, you know? Like, he's not in awe of what's going on. Now he's getting ready for his next start for Tampa. He was in the video room looking at video, looking at scouting reports. So, I mean, that means a lot to us, and we know we can trust him.
I just wanted to follow up. So Toley, obviously, it's almost like a show, really. He's such a larger-than-life human being and so emotional and demonstrative. But Early has this quiet calm about him. Where do you think that comes from?
I don't know, but they're the total opposite, but good kids, you know. Yeah. And actually, Early in the clubhouse, he's loud. He's always talking to people, you know. He has his own personality. But when it comes to pitching, you know, he's very calm, very thoughtful. And that's talking to Jason, you know, and to the captain, Veritek. When we met with Early in Sacramento for his start, that's the first time that I seen a rookie coming in with his notes. You know, usually he's like, you guys tell me and I execute. With him, he was prepared. He knew the opponent. You know, Carlos is leading the meeting. And, you know, he's like, yeah, I like that, but we can do this too, you know? And I was telling Jason, I said, hey, this is cool. You know, like, I mean, preparation comes into play. It's your first big league start. If I was him, I'd be like, hey, man, you dial it and I throw it, you know? Right. So really good pitcher, really good kid. One of the things that coming into the season, I think everybody was talking about our position players in player development, right? That was the whole talk, the big three. And if you look at the season, we have broad arms that have helped us win games, you know? And we're in a good spot now and in the future because he's a combination of both, you know? You have to pitch in this league to win championships, and I do believe as an organization we're doing an amazing job with that.
Red Sox manager Alex Cora here with us at Fenway Park, WEEI Afternoons. Getting back to the October comment that gained a lot of traction. First of all,
I love it.
You kind of did it to me 3 weeks ago maybe. I brought up bunting, and I said, was that an eye on October? And you go, no, that's an eye on September.
Yeah.
And I get that focus, but you guys have talked about October, even going back to February, I think, Bregman arrives, Crochet. It's like we plan on playing in October. That comment, do you regret saying it? Did it come off as a sign of like, I don't have faith in my team anymore? Like, how do you feel like that reaction?
No, it was more about the third catcher question. Bro, it's twice a day from Fort Myers all the way to October 28th. Let's put it that way. And sometimes you like, no, I'm not going to talk about the third catcher. You know, let's talk about what's going on, and we have to play better to get to October, right? And actually, I do believe the last three games, we've been better. Yesterday, tough one offensively, but pitching-wise was good. We play okay defense. I guess New York, the last two were good. You know, we just have to start hitting with men in scoring position.
How often do you – because you talk to the media a lot. It's a big part of your job, not just us, but obviously
– it's the part of the job.
Yes, it is. How often do you say something and kind of immediately say, ugh? Because Mike Vrabel talked about it this week. He was on the Greg Hill Show 6:30. I think he phrased it 6:30 on a Monday morning after a loss. I said something, and then it gets used against me in a court of law.
With all the respect to the 6:30 show, that's why I don't do it at 6:30.
Good for you.
I mean, they're great. I do it in Fort Myers, but that's a tough one. That's a tough one. It's a long night. You're asking, hey, yeah. It might be a long night, and you answered the wrong question.
Right.
I mean, it's the one thing, when people ask me about this job, and this is the reality of it, I hate to say it this way, but you control the narrative, right? From the first day you're on the bench in Fort Myers, all the way to the last out of hopefully the World Series, right? And there's certain days that you're on point, right? And there's certain days that you really don't want to answer questions, and you're like very, although I'm not there yet with Belichick, you know, like just cut him off. But there's certain things that through the media you can accomplish, right? And I was watching MLB Network, and the quote came out, and Brian Kenny's talking about it, and Joe Maddon is talking about it. Like, man, that wasn't meant to be, you know? Like it was more about the third catcher question. But it's not an easy job. And the thing here in this market compared to others, maybe Booney gets it because he does the podcast, yep, which is tough. That's very tough.
Mm-hmm.
If you say something in April – and it doesn't match with what you said in April, you say something in April, and then in July you say something different that doesn't match with that, you guys will bring it up.
Yep.
And I respect that. I respect that, you know? And, yeah. I mean, that's fair games, you know? And you have good days and bad days. I guess I had a bad day that day, but you guys know how I feel about October. You know, when you play in this place, not making it to playoffs is not acceptable. We've been really good the whole season, and one thing for sure, and this is something talking to the third base coach of the Tigers, my brother, is like you got to stay focused on what's in front of you. I think for 1 or 2 days, a lot of people are looking back here, and hey, we're 2 games behind the Yankees. We have a wild card spot right now. Let's keep going. You know, don't stop. We have a good baseball team. Are we hitting right now? We're not. You know, we're not playing great, but we're playing okay. So hopefully today we win the game, we win the series tomorrow, and we go on the road.
This is New England. We live to blame our problems on other people and live in the past, Alex. I mean, you know this by now. And as far as it goes with Vrabel, like his game's done at 4 o'clock on Sunday, so he's got time to get home, get to bed. Like you're here till midnight. You can't be up at 6 a.m. answering questions at that hour.
I'm here till midnight. You don't know what time I go to bed, especially when the family's not. Like last night, the family's not in town, and you're there watching the highlights and going over the game, and it's like, oh my God, you better go to sleep, kid.
Yeah, it's 2:30. You
work tomorrow.
You got to talk to the radio guys tomorrow.
Yeah.
Obviously, a lot has been connected to the offense struggling since Roman Anthony unfortunately went down.
Yeah.
So it's been 2 weeks since you announced that he was going on the DL. Can we get an update?
He's walking on the treadmill up to 25 minutes. Yesterday he told me it was a great walk. I mean,
he was a retired guy in Florida?
He's a 76-year-old woman.
he walked into the
clubhouse. We're going to take him to the Natick Mall, South Shore Plaza.
He walked in into the clubhouse, and I'm like, how you feeling? He's like, I'm feeling better. And where we at right now is like 25-minute walk on the treadmill. It was great. Yeah. He's feeling better. Still sore, but adding stuff to his rehab. No timetable, of course. But one thing that caught my attention yesterday was kind of like he went to my office. He's like, hey, I'm feeling better, you know, and I haven't heard that in a while.
Because last Wednesday you gave us the update. You're like, yeah, he's still really sore. And that made us feel like, oh, yeah. So he's felt the same way as when he injured it. That's no.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to take a while, but, you know, he's doing everything possible to hopefully get back.
So you referenced the lineup and some of the struggles, and we've all watched him. We see that first inning against the Yankees when it looks easy, and you just boom, 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 then it goes quiet. Last night it goes quiet. How do you explain it? How do you get this lineup going? What's the common thread as to why the struggles continue?
I think how many at-bats the last 4 games or 5 games with men in scoring position, I think it's like 46, right?
Yep, so 40-something.
The line's moving. You know, we're getting on base. We're getting 10 hits a game. Yesterday, ref walked 3 times. As a team, we walked 5. I think Trevor has done it this season, kind of like take the humble approach with men in scoring position, right? He's been shooting the ball to right field, giving him a chance to make contact, right? Shoot it to right field. If they hang something in the zone, he can hit it over the monster, but just take what they give you. There were certain at-bats against New York, against Fried. I thought we were really, really good, you know, 105 pitches in 5 innings, right, or 6 innings. We used the middle of the field, and we have to get back to that. Yesterday, we had bases loaded, and, you know, there was a pitch there to Sedan. We're preaching patience, right, with the kid. He takes the first one, it's a ball. He takes the second one, it's a ball. The third one, it's a cold strike.
You weren't happy.
And he wasn't either. Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, we talked to him before the game. You got to be patient. He is patient. He doesn't get the call. Next pitch, it's the same spot. He swings at it, and then a changeup, he strikes out. And then Romy, who's been one of our best hitters against lefties and righties, he hits into a double play. But the one thing that I'm happy with, the line is moving. We just have to cash in now.
So are you – you had a comment the other day, something to the effect like the way the Yankees play, and we that's cool and everybody loves it, but we got to be who we are. Is that a team thing? Is that an individual
thing? This is where we at right now as a team. We're not hitting the ball out of the ballpark. I think the last homer with men in scoring position was Ref in Sacramento, and this is who we are right now.
Yep.
So, yeah, we got guys that can hit the ball out of the ballpark, but they're not right now, so let's cash in. The Yankees, that's what they do. They hit homers. Us, we have to get on base, run the bases well, put them in play, and score runs.
So Bayo's ERA the last three starts is over 5.6. So I'm just curious, because he had a great August, and it's been up a little bit recently. Feeling good? Is he tired? Is everything? Because he's about to hit his inning, the highest innings total for a season as well.
No, he's feeling good. The one against the Yankees, he was off in that first inning, right? Pitch and – you know, we walked Judge and Rice hit the double. But stuff-wise, he's in a good place. He hit 98, 99 in Arizona, so no concerns.
Okay. Will your Abreu update, close, day-to-day? Could we see him?
Day-to-day. And
maybe just talked to him tomorrow?
I just talked to him, and he feels okay. He hit live BP on Monday. That day he was sore, and it was more about the workload on Sunday actually than actually, you know, one thing is to be sore, the other is to be tight, you know. So he was a little bit sore. He ran yesterday, feels good today. We'll go through the whole thing today and see where we at.
How hard is that for him? Because I look at him as a guy that when he gets hot, he's the guy that can hit the ball out of the ballpark and carry you guys.
I mean, it isn't a bat that we need. We know that. And this is even before Roman got hurt, because Willie hit in seventh, you know. It provided pop from the lineup, you know. First and second, two outs. Seventh hitter hits a homer. He's a three-run lead. So, hopefully, we get him. We get him back.
How does it? Lastly, for me, how does this go for you right now? Like in terms of how much of this is like trying extra to motivate the guys, give them what they need, versus like you appreciating the moment and then your scoreboard watching. Like, how do you handle all the different things that go into it? And can you just stop and appreciate the fact that like you have a chance to make the playoffs?
That's the best point right there. You know, like I was today, I did my thing, went out, ran a little bit, came back to the house. I was watching TV. I'm like, hey, kid, man, we got a chance to make the playoffs.
Yeah.
You know, like we're whatever we are in the wild card. We got a chance to catch up with the Yankees. We got a chance to play meaningful games in October. So enjoy it. Enjoy it.
Did you hear that word? He said October.
Enjoy it.
Like that word.
Yeah. There it is. He said it.
All right, yeah. Alex. Good luck tonight, tomorrow, and
lineup changes, man. No ask, no questions.
Oh, you want to? You want?
Oh, we got a little lineup change.
Yeah, give me the lineup.
We're going. Trevor second, Alex third.
Ooh. Oh wow.
We're gonna try that one today.
So we're jump starting one guy, hopefully.
And
but I don't
going.
Like moving the guy who's hot.
Well, we need traffic. We need traffic. I think the kid is gonna have a good game tonight.
And I dare say this will, I believe this is our last interview with you here in person at Fenway. We'll obviously talk to you next week as well, but we've always enjoyed the in-person interviews, the candor, the friendliness. This is great. I hope it is not our last in-person Fenway interview with you.
Amen to that. Thank you.
All right. Good luck.
Go Sox.
Good luck. That's Alex Cora, the manager of the Boston Red Sox here on WEEI Afternoons.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar Free. First round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right. Bill O'Brien joins us now, and he's powered by Verizon and by Shaw's and Star Market. Look for the new lower prices every day tags through the store and save on the items you buy most. Good morning, Bill. Greg's up in Vermont. How are you today?
Hey, Curtis. I'm doing good. How are you guys doing?
We're doing well. So rough one last weekend. 1-7 on the road, 7-1 at home since you took over. What's been, if you had one or two reasons, why do you think you guys are struggling away from Chestnut Hill?
Yeah, you know, I think it's one big reason is that, you know, when we're on the road, we let, first of all, we make too many what I call catastrophic mistakes, whether it's a, you know, a fumble snap or you know, an interception or, you know, something breakdown on defense, and we let it snowball. And we've got to figure that out, you know, because our games on the road, you know, obviously most of them, really all of them have been close games. And, you know, that's what it comes down to. At home, we obviously play better. And we're at home, you know, coming up against Cal. But we have to figure out the road, and we're working hard to try to figure it out.
Bill, after the game, you made a point to make it an emphasis that you guys need to do a better job coaching, and that starts with you. Going into a week where it's a bye week, what have you implemented? How do you make that a point to get better coaching out of your staff, out of yourself, for these players?
Well, the first thing we did was we sat in a team meeting, and I showed them the whole tape, you know, every single play of the Stanford game. And, you know, I think it's important for the head coach to get up there in front of them and tell them, like, hey, man, look, this is what we're looking for. We've got to, you know, make a better call here, but here you have to execute better. We have to – I think the key to my role is to making sure that these guys know that we're all in it together, that there's no finger-pointing. And Courtney, I know it doesn't look like this. I really understand that. I've been doing this a long time, but we're very close. You know, we're close to being what we want to be, but we have to stop – with a couple, you know, whether it's, you know, poor coaching decisions or the mistakes that we make, you know, on the field. And so I think it's important to just show them, teach them, think about, you know, what we can do to make it better. We had two really good practices where, you know, we scrimmaged and guys showed up ready to go. You know, we have a bunch of great guys, and I believe that we'll turn it around.
Well, Bill, I hope you know this. I hope your players know this. As somebody who's been a fan of BC football for quite some time, it does appear that way. Like, I think that's why these games are so heartbreaking for BC fans right now, is because we see how close you guys are, whether it was last week or the week before. Those are winnable games, and you're so close to it. And I think last week in particular, it's even harder, and I'm sure it's hard for you and the players when it comes to ACC matchups. You've got a bye week now and then another ACC matchup, because those are the games that you really want to capitalize on.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, I appreciate you saying that. I just know that, you know, we make the, you know, we just give you a couple examples. We're driving the ball. We're going in to possibly go up 24-6. We have a bad snap. We give it back to Stanford. Then we're driving the ball again. We get it all the way down to the 1 yard line. We fumble the ball into the end zone. You know, these are these things really don't happen that much in practice. So why do they happen in games? And we have to figure that out, and not, it's not a yelling and screaming thing. It's just, hey man, look, we got to focus on one play at a time. We have to think about, hey, look, get this call, execute that call. And that's what we're trying to do.
Bill, when you look at your offense, obviously you guys, I think you lead the nation in passing yards per game, but one area where it seems like you've been struggling all season long is rushing the football. What's been the biggest difference from last year to this year that is kind of led you in that direction, knowing that you're a team that has run the football well in the past?
Yeah, we have we're very inconsistent in the running game. You're exactly right. There are certain schemes that we run really, really well. And so when we run those, this is kind of going back to the coaching part of it, you know, myself, starting with me, you know, we have to do what we do well. This team does some things better than last year's team and vice versa. So we have to do what we do well. And I think if we can really, you know, understand that, and I think we do now, having spent a lot of time on this in the last few days here, you know, we'll be able to run the ball better. But it's been a lot of different things, you know. Teams are taking away, they're loading the box, they're taking it away from us, you know, a lot of movement. We play too much what I call wad ball, where we stuff everybody in there, and, you know, it's like a rugby scrum, and we gotta figure that out. And I think we're on the right track with figuring that out and helping our players, and, you know, so I think it'll improve. I really do.
Billy, been a lot of talk across the NFL recently about how long should a top draft pick have at the quarterback position before you can make a judgment on them. Colin Cowherd had a theory that, you know, Thanksgiving in your second year. Do you have any sort of, given your expertise coaching quarterbacks in the NFL, how long a rookie top pick needs to be ready to go and performing in the NFL?
I think there's so much that goes into developing a young quarterback in the NFL. You know, the first thing you have to do, it's very difficult, and you have to find the right people to do this. And you know, obviously the Patriots have, with Josh and that offensive staff, they've got the right people. But, you know, you have to teach them, obviously, your system. You have to teach them NFL defensive philosophies because it's totally different than college. You have to teach them how to prepare, how to watch film, what they're looking for. I equate it to, like, you know, going to law school, right? They always say the first couple of years of law school is brutal, and then it gets a little bit better in the third year. I don't know if you can put a time limit on it, because I also think it has to do with who's surrounding the guy. Like, does the guy have an offensive line? Does the guy have guys he can throw to, right? You're trying to build the team around him. What's the defense like? I mean, there's so much that goes into it. But you have to give the guy time, you know, to think that you're going to develop a guy in 6 months or a year, and all of a sudden this guy's going to turn in. I mean, you know, the greatest example of all time, we saw it, right? Tom came in, he didn't play at all his first year, and then the second year, obviously everybody knows Drew got hurt, and he was prepared. He had put so much time into it, but it was very simple, right? They kept it simple for him, and he was able to execute, and they played really well on defense, and they had a lot of veteran players, and, you know, it was the perfect storm. But it takes time. It takes a lot of time.
Yeah, and he had a great tight end that really showed him the way in Wiggy.
Absolutely.
Bill, one of the things, like, even Tom's talked about this, is just with the quarterback position of these guys in college not being prepared because they don't even huddle. They look to the sidelines, and it's almost like everybody's being told what to do. But then when you get to the league, the quarterback is basically, you know, the captain of the ship. He has to give the play in the huddle. Is there a difference, because I think you would know better than anybody coaching in the league and coaching in college, is the college game a little bit more, I don't want to say, use the word dumbed down, like you're not smart, but where it's more of the coaches telling you what to do offensively versus the league, where you have to understand what you're doing as the quarterback and where, what everybody's assignments are?
You know, I think I would pretty much agree with that. I would say that, you know, there's less time to spend with the quarterback in college, right? Meaning this, like, the guy's got five classes, you know what I mean? So he's got to go to class. But I do think it's the philosophy of each school. Like, for instance, when I went to Penn State and I came straight from the Patriots to Penn State. And when I went there, I was amazed, like, you know, 4-3 defense, who's the Mike? And the quarterbacks are like, what are you talking about? 3-4 defense, who's the Sam? Like, they're like, what are you talking about? What's cover three? What's cover four? So you had to teach them not only your system, but what is going on defensively. That's the key, like, to understand how your system, how your formation, your personnel, your motion affects the defense. What is the defense doing? Do you understand defensive football? I always said that when I started coaching Tom could coach the secondary. Like, he could go over there and coach the secondary. He would line them up in the scout team. He's like, no, you should be in this leverage. You know, you should be over here. You know, and so I think, like, that comes from a ton of preparation and a ton of studying and seeing film and studying the playbook. And it takes time. It takes a lot of time.
All right, Billy. Well, thanks so much for your time. As always, I hope you can sit back and watch a little football this weekend before next week in the Cal Bears at Alumni Stadium.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
All right, thank you. That's Billy O'Brien here on the Greg Hill Show without Greg Hill.
Let's go to the phone lines now to our expert QB guy, Brian Hoyer. You're a Morgan Wallen fan?
Hey, I just went to his concert at Gillette. It was very entertaining, and you're right. He is one of the hottest artists out there right now. I don't know if he's going to be playing the Super Bowl halftime anytime soon, but it was pretty cool to see him walk out with Vrabel the night I was there, and then I thought the walkout with Gronk was epic, you know, slamming the guitar with the Gronk spike. So seemed like it was a pretty good show.
Wow. You went to both shows, Brian?
No, I only went to the first night, but I saw my boy Gronk there the second night, and I loved him doing the Gronk spike of the guitar, which is pretty cool.
Brian, if you like Morgan Wallen and I like Morgan Wallen, let's not let Ted Johnson try to bully us into thinking he's less than he is. He's a great modern act.
It says more about me than the fact that I wouldn't know much about the guy than it says about.
I saw someone reference him as redneck pop music, which kind of makes sense.
Yes, I would agree with that. Brian Hoyer, so week one. We were asking Drake May and Josh McDaniels.
Mac Jones had a good week.
He did. And we're going to get into that at some point. But let's stick to Drake May for now. Week one, too much on his plate. Doesn't look comfortable. Doesn't look confident. Week two, goes into Miami. Tough place to play. Gets the win and has his best game of his young career. Look decisive and confident. Which one was an overreaction? Were we overreacting with the bad? Are we overreacting now with the good? Where do you land on that?
I think week one is the overreaction. I mean, look, the reality was, and I said this after the first game, there were a lot of good plays by Drake in that game. He missed the first third down. We talked about it, his feet. I think the one thing that I saw in week two was just his feet underneath him. And it really showed on the play to Mondre that everybody's been talking about. Yeah, it was a great throw, but I think last year in that situation, Drake May would have felt that pressure. Instead of stepping up in the pocket and settling and finding the receiver down the field, he would have taken off and ran. And I think that's improvement right there. I thought his feet were very quiet. I thought Josh McDaniels did a tremendous job of getting him in rhythm early with some of these passes we saw on the move. And I mean, look, give Josh a lot of credit for him running a system he did for a long time. There were some plays, particularly on that first drive, the throwback to Austin Hooper. That's straight out of the Kyle Shanahan West Coast playbook. I ran that in Kyle. I ran that in Cleveland with Kyle. I ran that in San Francisco with Kyle. And so Josh is adapting his system to suit Drake May's talents. And the reality is Drake feels comfortable throwing on the run. So I think you're going to see that. And the hard part about that is when you're the play caller is if you're not running the ball well, then the defense isn't really always going to honor that. And so they got off to a fast start. They were able to run the ball. The O-line had better blocks in the running game. And then they were able to set some of those play action passes up, which I think really settled Drake in. And then the rest of the game, I mean, he just looks so calm, cool, and collected. You love to see it.
Brian, the game plan I just found interesting. You mentioned that looked like a lot like a Kyle Shanahan, that boot throwback, which was a beautiful play. I love that play. I do. But it felt like there was a lot of other plays that reminded me of, you know, there was a lot of zone, wide zone runs, zone cutbacks. Yep. You mentioned the boot throwback. You had the boots, the waggles. You had, you know, the ball was out fast, Brian. I just the game plan, it looked like I was watching the Rams or the 49ers. And I just wonder, do you think that Josh McDaniels will adjust his coaching style, his philosophies to fit the quarterback? Because he was under center a lot more in this game than he was in week one. Yep. Do you think Josh will continue down that road or his ego getting away and he'll stick to what he likes to do?
No, not at all. I think the one thing that people make the assumption like, oh, he's not running his offense. He's running his offense. Those plays are in the offense. And Ted, you may remember this. I don't know if you were playing, but they used to send Brady on some of those bootlegs and nakeds and things. And the story that I was told was one day he took a shot to the chin and Bill Belichick said, never again are we running those plays in this offense. So they are in there. And to be honest with you, when I was playing in the preseason or when Mac Jones was playing, we had those in the offense. You just have to make sure you call them against the right defense. I think that's the key. And that's why Kyle Shanahan is so good at it. And Josh is figuring out what teams to run them against and whatnot. I don't think you want to run those against a Max Crosby defensive end. Now you go into Miami with these guys who are roaring off the edge, selling out to chase the run. Now you can pull that ball or The thing that I loved on the one to Hooper was they motioned Hunter Henry from out wide so he'd have the angle to pin that defensive end so Drake could pull up and throw it back. So it all has to tie together, and I think Josh, it's all there for him. It's just a matter of determining what is my quarterback feeling good with, what are the players feeling good with, and what can we expose the opposing defense with. Look, the Steelers are a totally different scheme than the Miami Dolphins, so we will see them expose them in different ways, especially with the injuries that they're dealing with.
Brian, so far it seems like the running backs have proved to be, outside of Drake, the position of strength, the best skill position players on the team. They all kind of contributed on Sunday. Do you think that keeps up that way, or will we possibly see a true wide receiver one on this team emerge?
No, I think the one thing that I always said in playing in the system is the best way to move the ball down the field is throw to the open guy. Who that is, I don't know. The defense has to tell me, especially when you're playing a team that's going to play zone. I loved seeing Diggs kind of sit like on that fourth down play. They put him in motion, and he was having that little sit route that we were so familiar with Julian or Dola or Jacoby Myers running. He has a great feel for that. I think you'll start to see him get more of these option routes. I love seeing Mac Hollins get involved. He's gonna be involved because he's in there to help block the down safety in the running game. And so when you do that enough, you're gonna bluff the block on the safety, and you're gonna go out, and that's where the boot touchdown came from. Yeah. So there's a lot of different ways to get these guys involved, and the reality is we don't have a Jamar Chase. Stephon Diggs is pretty good, but I don't think he's going to be, you know, using him in the way that the Bengals use Chase or the way that the Vikings use Justin Jefferson. They're going to use it to expose defenses where they see fit. And I thought the best thing about Drake was he was just thrown to the open guy. You mentioned it, Ted, getting the ball out quick, reading the coverage, getting in a rhythm, feeling comfortable. And I just thought from week one to week two, the settling of his feet in the pocket allowed him to be so accurate. And the one thing I think, too, he did a good job of realizing and feeling the pocket and when to run and when not to run. And I thought that was awesome. The one where he kind of scooted up through the middle, he stepped up, he felt the seas part, and he took off and ran. And so it didn't feel like he looked like he was limiting himself to scrambling. It was just he was letting the defense tell him when it's time to go.
Former Patriots quarterback Brian Hoyer here with us on WEEI Afternoons. Brian, you just mentioned Diggs and some of those routes kind of underneath and some of the things we saw Amendola or Edelman do. Is he evolving into that slot guy in Josh's system? And are we seeing maybe Pop Douglas phased out? A lot of us thought that might be Pop Douglas's role, but could that end up being what Steph Diggs grows into?
I think there's a common misconception of what that slot role is in the system. And we saw two different slot receivers play at the same time when Amendola and Edelman were playing together. Jacoby Myers was totally different than those two. Yep. Wes Welker was different than a lot of them. And the slot receiver, and the thing that you got to understand is when they do these personnel groupings, everybody's going to get a chance to play that slot receiver role, because one of the beauties of this system is that you can move guys around and you can put them in advantageous looks. So I think what I saw there is just trusting a veteran guy on an option route to make the right decision. And because on that route, you could sit, you can go across, you can come back out. And I felt like Diggs was so decisive. He sat down in the zone. Drake felt it, got him the ball quickly and moved on. And look, converting that fourth down is what leads to that opening touchdown. So I think you're seeing a veteran receiver take on a role of maybe some of those option routes. That doesn't mean that Pop's not going to be in there to run some of those outbreaking routes, maybe some of those crosses. It's just a different way to use a skill set and a trust with a veteran receiver in Diggs.
I always learn something new listening to B. Hoyer. If you want to learn something about football, you'll listen to these hits. Brian, I was looking at your tweet. So you want to find Brian Hoyer on Twitter. It's at B. Hoyer 7 on Twitter. And I'm curious, you said this in your tweet. You said, "I love the empowerment of the players. You can see how the guys respond. Big foundational piece laid yesterday," meaning the Sunday game, battling through the adversity to get the win in Miami, which we all know has been hard to do over the years. What do you think that win in Miami does for this team, what it meant for this team, when it comes to all aspects, the quarterback, the franchise, and the new head coach?
Yeah, I love the way that Vrabel, you know, he gets the game ball from RKK, and he's thankful for it, but he says it's all about the players. And I think when you do that, your players realize he's going to credit us and he's going to hold us accountable. And I think going down there and struggling through the heat and, you know, getting an early lead, losing it, punt return for a touchdown, then you respond with a kickoff, like all that back and forth. And I think Vrabel talked about it. Like, we got in a street fight a little bit and our guys didn't back down. You almost gain more of an understanding of who you are as a team, as opposed to just going down there and winning by two touchdowns. I think sometimes winning those grimy, dirty wins, especially in a place where it's been hard for the Patriots to win over the years, I have to imagine they feel pretty good about themselves because they won and they know there's a lot of things they can clean up. So that flight back from Miami was a little sweeter, having gone through the adversity and coming out on top.
All right. Well, it can't be all wine and roses. There was a little adversity out there the first week and the second week as well. The defense has had their issues. Obviously, the return of Christian Gonzalez will make a massive difference. Depending on when he comes back, we're not really sure. But the linebacker play seems to be a little bit of a concern right now. How do you think that gets adjusted, Brian?
Yeah, I mean, look, they've missed a few tackles. That's not what those guys are known for. And look, the touchdown to Achan, I mean, that's not the position you want to put Robert Splaine in. With 53 yards of field, they're playing two-man, and he's got it. He can't give up the inside leverage, but that's not – he's not a cover linebacker. He's a Mike linebacker in base defense that's going to go and hit players downhill. And so he's a little bit out of position there. I think knowing Spill and having played with him, he's going to get that figured out. I think the one thing that I think will help them a lot is getting Christian Gonzalez back, right? That'll shut down some of these explosive plays they've given up. And let's be honest, Miami Dolphins, they're reeling a little bit, but they still have explosive players when it comes to Jaylen Waddle and Tyreek Hill and Achan, and they were able to hit some of those plays. And I think the one thing that you'd love to see is through all the adversity, when it came down to it, and now luckily Achan stepped out of bounds, so it gave him that opportunity. But the guy you paid all that money to in the offseason, over there, Milton Williams comes up with a big-time sack to seal the game. I mean, those are the steps that you have to take, those guys who you want to be your leaders, to step up and make those plays in a big-time moment.
Brian, how's your right arm feeling?
My arm's great. If I take one hit, I'd crumple like a paper bag.
I mean, starters are dropping like flies. Are you getting any phone calls?
Hey, Carson Wentz is still playing, man.
I'm too far gone, but it's interesting because I talked about that on SiriusXM Radio today. We were just talking about, you know, all these quarterbacks getting hurt. And Ted, you might remember this from your times playing here, but Bill used to say availability is sometimes greater than your ability, because it doesn't matter how good you are if you can't stay out on the field. And I think these quarterbacks have to understand, and I hope this goes along with our young quarterback as well, that having the ability to stay out there is one of the greatest skills you can have. We saw it with Tom Brady for all those years. That's one of the best things you can do, is stay healthy and be out there for your team. And so, look, I hope Drake is learning from past experience. I'm learning from the guys around the league, because Jaden Daniels and J.J. McCarthy, when did they get hurt? When they scrambled. So you got to be smart. You don't want to take the aggressiveness away. The one thing that Drake has going for him is he's a little bit bigger than those guys. So you always got to be conscious of that and make sure you protect yourself out there.
All right, Brian, we appreciate the insight. As Ted said, man, I feel like we learn something every time we talk to you. So we look forward to talking to you next Tuesday.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
Thanks Brian.
Hopefully another victory.
Brian. Yep. Yes, sir. Brian Hoyer, who took heat unnecessarily from the midday show for his range of win prediction.
It was kind of a topic in the NBC Sports Newsroom, too.
Oh, really? He took heat there as well?
Yeah, yeah. Well, people are getting a chuckle out of the 8 to 11 wins thing.
Okay.
You know, so there's a lot of folks in the media snickering behind 8 to 11. Brian, come on.
Okay, predictions are useless anyway, so he did it in a different way than the rest of us screw up our predictions. Guess what? He's probably going to be right. I bet you he lands somewhere in that range.
It's not going to be that hard to be wrong.
I'm actually taking notes, because you know me, I like to be right. Yeah. So if Brian Hoyer ends up right, maybe I'll start doing ranges for everything in the future. Appreciate Brian Hoyer joining us.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. You bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar Free. First round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.